Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to this week's edition of Colorado Business Digest, narrated by Mike Hesser, with resources including ColoradoBiz.com, Denver 7, the Leeds School of Business, and the Colorado Business Journal. Our first article is titled, USPS to Unveil Colorado Statehood Forever Stamp, dated December 26, 2025. The U.S. Postal Service will commemorate Colorado's 150th anniversary of statehood with the release of a forever stamp featuring a photograph of Jagged Mountain by nature photographer John Fielder. The first day of issue ceremony is scheduled for 9 a.m. on Saturday, January 24th, at the History Colorado Center of Denver. The event is free and open to the public, and attendees are encouraged to register in advance through the Postal Service website. The dedication will be led by Amber F. McReynolds, chairwoman of the USPS Board of Governors. News of the stamp's release will be shared on social media using the hashtag Colorado Stamp. The stamp unveiling coincides with the opening of Mountain's Majesty on the Summit with John Fielder, a new exhibition celebrating Colorado's landscapes through the photographer's work. Colorado will mark its sesquicentennial in 2026. The state became the 38th to join the Union on August 1, 1876, earning the nickname the Centennial State because its admission came 100 years after the United States declared independence. Known for its dramatic scenery, Colorado is home to the Rocky Mountains and has the highest average elevation of any state at about 6,800 feet. The state's name comes from a Spanish term meaning colored red or ruddy, a reference to the silt carried by the Colorado River. Colorado features world-renowned ski areas, more than 39,000 miles of hiking trails, numerous state parks and four national parks, Rocky Mountain, Black Canyon of the Gunnison, Great Sand Dunes, and Mesa Verde. The state also has national monuments, wildlife areas, and hundreds of historic ghost towns. Cultural institutions across Colorado include the History Colorado Center, Denver Art Museum, Denver Museum of Nature and Science, U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museum, and others. The state is also known for strong local food movement and a large number of craft breweries. Colorado's heritage reflects thousands of years of human history. Archaeological sites across the state include cliff dwellings built by ancestral Pueblans in the southwest. Native American tribes, including the Ute, Cheyenne, Arapaho, Apache, Comanche, Kiowa, Pawnee, Shoshone, and Lakota, have long ties to the region and continue to call Colorado home. Our next article is titled, The Exchange Opens Historic Building During Stock Show, dated December 26, 2025. To the right of this article is a small ad that reads, Innovative Counsel, National Reach, Local Insight. Meet the modern law firm, Taft, Sherman, and Howard. Visitors attending the National Western Stock Show will have an opportunity to step inside one of Denver's most historic buildings when the Exchange hosts weekly public open houses throughout the event. EXDO Group announced that the 125-year-old Livestock Exchange building will be open to the public every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. during the stock show, which runs January 10 through January 25, 2026. The open houses are free and open to stock show attendees, nearby residents, and members of the broader Denver community. As more than 700,000 visitors are expected at the National Western Complex, the open houses are intended to showcase the fully rehabilitated building and its new role as a working mercantile and office space. Guests will be able to tour the building and speak with representatives about its restoration and future uses. The Livestock Exchange building was originally constructed in 1898 and expanded in 1916 and 1919. For decades, it served as a central hub of Colorado's livestock economy. The building has been restored by EXDO Group in partnership with the Colorado Cattlemen's Association, the National Western Center Authority, and developers Justin Croft and John Hartman. The rehabilitation restored key architectural features, including the grand staircase, central pyramidal skylight, red and blonde brick masonry, Ionic entry columns, and double-hung windows. Modern upgrades were added to improve light, energy efficiency, and workplace functionality while preserving the building's historic character. The Exchange is once again the beating heart of the National Western Campus, said Kevin Preblood of EXDO Group. These open houses invite people to walk the same halls where generations of livestock deals were made and to see how the building is now supporting the next era of Western commerce. The Exchange is scheduled to open for business January 10th with the Colorado Cattlemen's Association as its first tenant. Additional spaces will be filled by Western Heritage retailers, office tenants, and a limited residency by the Wide Open Saloon from January 8th through January 24. A food and beverage concept aligned with the building's history is also planned. Organizers said the mix of tenants is intended to establish the Exchange as a cultural and economic hub for industries tied to agriculture, livestock, food, water, energy, and hospitality. The open house will take place at the Exchange, located at 4701 Marion Street in Denver. No RSVP is required. Our next article is titled, Adaptive Pickleball Expands Access Across Colorado, dated December 26, 2025. On a recent weekday at an indoor pickleball club in Thornton, former Paralympian Jacob Heilweil rolled onto the court in a pickleball-specific sports chair, greeting a small group of athletes eager to learn the game. Heilweil, founder and CEO of the nonprofit Adaptive Sports for All, is partnering with the Pickler to grow adaptive pickleball programs at indoor clubs across Colorado. Programs are currently offered at the Pickler locations in Thornton and Loveland, with plans to expand to additional communities statewide. The partnership aims to make pickleball accessible to players of all abilities, particularly those who use wheelchairs, as the sport continues its rapid growth nationwide. Pickleball has such an incredible community, Heilweil said. When I tried it for the first time, people were accommodating, encouraging, and ready to include everyone. That's what inspired me to bring this sport to others who use wheelchairs. Heilweil's path to adaptive sports leadership began far from Colorado. Born on the South Korean island of Jeju, he contracted polio as an infant and lost the use of his legs. After being adopted by a family in Hawaii, he discovered wheelchair racing and eventually competed in more than 90 marathons and 3 Paralympic Games, including the 1996 Atlanta Games wheelchair demonstration event. After retiring from elite competition, Heilweil founded Adaptive Sports for All in 2023 to promote inclusive athletic opportunities with a focus on wheelchair racing and adaptive pickleball. The Adaptive Pickleball Initiative began at the Pickler Loveland, where owner and operator Leslie Arnold partnered with Adaptive Sports for All to launch regular clinics and open play sessions. Seeing athletes of all abilities share the same courts reminds us of what pickleball is truly about, Arnold said. Adaptive pickleball has become one of the most meaningful programs we've launched. Following its success in Loveland, the program expanded to Thornton under the leadership of owner Amber Ryman. Weekly sessions there bring together wheelchair users and able-bodied players who follow modified rules, such as allowing 2 bounces before a return. I love the inclusive environment at the Pickler Thornton, Ryman said. Being able to build a program that welcomes everyone aligns with our values and our drive to serve the whole community. Each session typically draws between 4 and 12 players. Heilweil is also working with club owners in Littleton, Aurora, Fort Collins, and Cheyenne to introduce adaptive programming at additional locations. He collaborates with Eagle Sports Chairs, a manufacturer developing pickleball-specific wheelchairs, with the long-term goal of making adaptive chairs available for members to borrow at every club. The owners and instructors are passionate about growing adaptive pickleball, Heilweil said. We're not just teaching the game, we're creating a community. Looking ahead, Heilweil hopes to develop adaptive leagues, tournaments, and membership opportunities throughout Colorado. For Ryman, the mission is personal. My husband is also disabled, she said. Seeing people play who may have once thought it wasn't possible is incredibly rewarding. Adaptive play sessions are open to the public, and community members are encouraged to attend, participate, or cheer from the sidelines. More information is available through the Pickler and Adaptive Sports for All websites. Our next article is titled, Custom Brokers Scramble to Decode Trump Tariff Rules, dated December 23, 2025. After a half century immersed in the world of trade, custom broker Amy Magnus thought she'd seen it all, navigating mountains of regulations and all sorts of logistical hurdles to import everything from lumber and bananas to circus animals and Egyptian mummies. Then came 2025. Tariffs were imposed in ways she'd never seen. New rules left her wondering what they really meant. Federal workers, always a reliable backstop, grew more elusive. 2025 has changed the trade system, said Magnus. It wasn't perfect before, but it was a functioning system. Now it is a lot more chaotic and troubling. Once hidden cogs in the international trade machine, custom brokers are getting a rare spotlight as Donald Trump reinvents America's commercial ties with the world. If this breathless year of tariffs amounts to a trade war, customs brokers are on its front lines. Few Americans have been exposed to as many fluctuations in trade policy as the custom broker. They were there in the opening days of Trump's second term, when tariffs were announced on Canada and Mexico, and 2 days later when those same levies were paused. They were there for every rule on imports of steel and seafood, cars and copper, polysilicon and pharmaceuticals, and more. For every tariff, for every carved out, for every order, brokers have been left to translate policy into reality, line by line and code by code, in a year when it seemed every passing week brought change. We were used to decades of a certain way of processing, and from January to now, that universe has been turned kind of upside down on us, says Al Rafa, a customs broker in Elizabeth, New Jersey, who helps shepherd container loads of cargo into the U.S., packed to the brim with everything from rounds of brie to boxes of chocolate. Each shipment of imported products to the country requires filings with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and often with other agencies. Importers often turn to brokers to handle the regulatory legwork, and with a spate of new trade rules issued by the Trump administration, demand has grown alongside their workloads. Many shipments that were previously duty-free are now subject to tariffs. Other imports that had minimal levies that might cost a company a few hundred dollars have had their bills ballooned to thousands. For Rafa and his crew, the ever-expanding list of tariffs means a given product could be subjected to taxes under multiple separate tariff lines. The one line item of cheese that previously was just one tariff, now it could be two, three, in some cases five tariff numbers, says the 53-year-old Rafa, who has had jobs in trade since he was a teenager and who has a button emblazoned with "Make Trade Boring Again." Government regulations have always been a reality for brokers and the very reason for their existence. When thick tomes of trade rules were changed in the past, they were typically issued well ahead of their effective dates, with periods for comment and review, each word of policy crafted to convey clarity and definition. With Trump, word of a major change in trade rules might come in a Truth Social post or an oversized chart clutched by the president in a Rose Garden appearance. You'd be remiss not to be looking at the White House website on a daily basis, multiple times a day, just to see what executive order is going to be announced, Rafa says. Each announcement sends brokerage firms scrambling to dissect the rules, update their systems to reflect them, and alert customers with shipments en route for whom any shift in tariffs could mean a major hit to their bottom line. J.D. Gonzalez, a third-generation customs broker in Laredo, Texas, and president of the National Customs Brokers and Forwarders Association of America, says the volume and speed of changes have been challenging enough, but the wording of White House orders has often left more unanswered questions than brokers are accustomed to. The order is kind of vague sometimes. The guidance that's being provided is sometimes murky, and we're trying to make the determination, the 62-year-old Gonzalez says. Gonzalez rattles off 10-digit tariff codes for alcohol and doors and recites the complicated web of rules that determine the duties on a chair with a steel frame produced in the U.S. but processed in Mexico. As brokers' work has grown together, grown tougher, he says some of these firms have been charging customers more for their services because each item they're responsible for tracking on a bill of lading takes longer. You double the time, he says. Brokers can't help but see the imprints of their work everywhere they go. Gonzalez looks at a t-shirt tag and thinks of what a broker did to get it into the country. Magnus sees Belgian chocolate or Chinese silk and is awed, despite all the things that could have kept something from landing on a store shelf that has still arrived. Rafa walks through the supermarket, picks up a can of artichoke hearts, and considers every possible regulation that might apply to secure its import into the country. It has been heartening for brokers who existed in the gray arcana of hidden bureaucracy unseen for most Americans to now earn a bit more recognition. It was maybe taken for granted how that wonderful piece of gourmet cheese got on the shelf, or that Gucci bag, says Rafa. Up until this year, people were clueless what I did. Magnus, who was in her 70s and based on Marco Island, Florida, spent 18 years at U.S. Customs before starting at a brokerage in 1992. She came to find comfort in the precision of rules governing every import she cleared the way for, from crude oil to diamonds. We don't like to have any doubt. We don't like to leave anything up to interpretation, she says. When we ourselves are struggling, trying to interpret and understand the meaning of some of these things, it is a very unsettling place to be. It's not just the White House orders that have complicated her work. The Department of Government Efficiency's cost-cutting blitz under billionaire Elon Musk led to layoffs and retirements of trusted government workers whom brokers turned to for guidance. A shutdown slowed operations at ports, and fear of being out of step with the administration has some federal employees cautious about decoding trade orders, making answers on interpretation of tariff rules sometimes tough to come by. Magnus was befuddled by moves that seemed at odds with everything she knew of trade policy. Canada as an adversary? Switzerland subjected to 39% tariffs? It defied how she had come to see the choreography of cargo and what it says about the world. It's like an incredible ballet to be able to trade with all these countries all over the world, she says. In my own mind, I always felt that as long as we were trading and we were friendly with each other, we were reducing the chance of war and killing each other. Work has been so hectic this year that Magnus hasn't managed to take a vacation. Weekends have so frequently been upended by Friday afternoon edicts announcing that a tariff is going into effect or being removed that it has become an inside joke among colleagues. It's Friday afternoon, she says. Is everybody watching? A couple of hours after Magnus repeats this, the next White House order is posted, undoing a slew of tariffs on agricultural products and sending brokers into another scurry. Our next article is titled Colorado Sues Trump Administration Over EV Charging Funds, dated December 16, 2025. Colorado on Tuesday joined a coalition of 16 states and the District of Columbia in suing the Trump administration, alleging it illegally suspended federal funding for electric vehicle charging infrastructure approved by Congress. Attorney General Phil Weiser co-led the lawsuit, which challenges the U.S. Department of Transportation's refusal to approve new funding under two bipartisan grant programs created by the 2021 Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. The programs are the Charging and Fueling Infrastructure Program and the Electric Vehicle Charger Reliability and Accessibility Accelerator Program. According to the complaint, the Transportation Department did not provide notice or explanation for halting approvals and has effectively frozen the programs despite a congressional mandate to distribute the funds. The U.S. Department of Transportation appears to have implemented a de facto freeze of charging and fueling infrastructure funds in violation of Congress's directive to fund this program, Weiser said. This is not necessarily a new tactic, and the courts have stopped similar efforts by this administration to freeze funds while conducting vague policy reviews. Demand for electric vehicles continues to grow rapidly in Colorado, and I'm committed to fighting for EV owners and clean air. Like the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program, the CFI and Accelerator programs are five-year initiatives designed to build or repair EV chargers nationwide. The lawsuit alleges that the Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration have declined to obligate new funds under both programs since spring of 2025. Colorado officials say the funding freeze puts multiple projects at risk. In January 2024, the Federal Highway Administration awarded Colorado State University nearly $9 million through the CFI program to develop three public hydrogen fueling stations along I-25 near CSU campuses in Fort Collins, Denver, and Pueblo. The project is intended to improve access for medium and heavy-duty hydrogen-powered fleets and light-duty electric vehicles. To date, CSU has received about $1.1 million, which has been used for design and permitting. The university has been unable to secure construction funds, and inquiries about additional funding obligations have gone unanswered, according to the complaint. The city of Pueblo and Boulder County also face uncertainty over millions of dollars earmarked for charging and fueling infrastructure. The lawsuit argues that the administration's refusal to release the funds violates the separation of powers and the Administrative Procedure Act. The programs were established by statute, and federal agencies are required to carry out the law as written, the complaint states. The states are asking the court to declare the funding freeze unlawful and permanently bar the administration from withholding funds. The lawsuit is being led by the Attorneys General of California, Colorado, and Washington. Our next article is titled, Trimble Expands Engineers Without Borders Partnership, dated December 26, 2025. Trimble has expanded its partnership with Engineers Without Borders through a new employee-funded grant and technology donation aimed at supporting community-driven infrastructure projects worldwide. On December 17, Engineers Without Borders representatives visited Trimble's Westminster campus to receive a $48,000 contribution funded by Trimble employees, along with a donation of Trimble Catalyst GNSS receivers. Trimble employees across the country contributed to the fundraising effort, reinforcing the firm's longstanding support for Engineers Without Borders' mission. The donation will support Engineers Without Borders projects focused on improving access to clean water, sanitation, energy, and critical infrastructure in underserved communities worldwide. The employee-funded contribution builds on a broader strategic partnership Trimble announced earlier this year with the Engineers Without Borders Network, facilitated by Engineers Without Borders International. Under the expanded collaboration, Trimble is providing financial support, hardware, software, and technical training expertise for international projects. Trimble has previously supported Engineers Without Borders in the United States through technology donations to student chapters, disaster relief, and climate resiliency grants via the Trimble Foundation Fund and STEM education initiatives. The expanded partnership marks a significant step in extending that support globally. The collaboration's first major international initiative is an 18-month critical infrastructure project in eastern Uganda in partnership with Engineers Without Borders East Africa. The effort focuses on helping local governments unlock existing public funding for infrastructure projects. While local funds are available, many district parishes lack the engineering data, tools, and capacity needed to educate them. Working with Trimble can help unlock these funds and deliver essential master plans, financial models, and engineering skills at the required scale, said Peter Enzbanida of Engineers Without Borders, East Africa. The Uganda project includes three phases, beginning with technical baseline surveys and infrastructure mapping using Trimble technology, geographic information system software, and drone support. The initial phase also includes recruiting and training 40 local youth enumerators to conduct a population census. Later phases will involve feasibility studies, technical audits, community co-design sessions, financial modeling, and cost-benefit analysis. The results will be used in presentations to attract commercial investment, including potential public-private partnerships. Capacity building is a central focus of the partnership. Phase 2 includes a hands-on build-a-thon event that will bring together Trimble teams, customers, and partners to provide rapid technical assistance. Trimble is also working with its education partner, Panel, to engage women leaders in construction and engineering to help guide the initiative. The critical infrastructure project in eastern Uganda is an ideal starting point for this expanded collaboration, said Sumele Adelana, a product marketing leader at Trimble. By helping communities develop the engineering plans needed to secure funding, we can empower them to meet critical infrastructure needs now and in the future. Trimble officials said the employee-funded grant and equipment donation reflect the company's broader commitment to pairing technology with local expertise to support sustainable development worldwide. Our next article is titled, Consumer Spending Lifts U.S. GDP Growth in Third Quarter, dated December 23, 2025. The U.S. economy grew at its fastest pace in 2 years in the third quarter, fueled by robust consumer spending, though momentum appears to have faded amid the rising cost of living and recent government shutdown. The stronger-than-expected increase in gross domestic product last quarter, which was reported by the Commerce Department on Tuesday, also reflected solid growth in imports, which helped to shrink the trade deficit, as well as government spending and a still solid pace of business investment in equipment and artificial intelligence projects. The increase in consumer spending was the fastest in nearly a year, as households splurged on recreational goods and vehicles and traveled internationally. Economists say higher-income households are driving spending thanks to a stock market boom that has inflated household wealth, while middle- and lower-income households have mostly pulled back because of high inflation, partly blamed on Donald Trump's import tariffs. This trend has created what is called a K-shaped economy. Although the GDP report is outdated due to the 43-day federal government shutdown, economists said that strong economic growth last quarter reduced the need for the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates again in January. Inflation accelerated in the third quarter. The report will greatly lessen the odds of a Fed cut on January 28 and even add some doubt about future moves, said Saul Guattari, a senior economist at BMO Capital Markets. Given the economy's resilience, softness in both employment and inflation might be needed to spur rate cuts in 2026. Gross domestic product increased at a 4.3% annualized rate last quarter, the fastest pace since the third quarter of 2023, the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis said in its initial estimate of third quarter GDP. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast GDP would rise at a 3.3% pace. The economy grew at a 3.8% pace in the second quarter. Consumer spending increased at a 3.5% rate last quarter, the strongest pace since the fourth quarter of 2024, after advancing at a 2.5% pace in the second quarter. In addition to recreational goods and vehicles, consumption was also boosted by spending on non-durable goods like food for consumption at home, prescription medication, apparel, and footwear. Consumers also spent more on health care, including outpatient, hospital, and nursing home services. But that data is in the rearview mirror now. Retail sales stalled in October, while motor vehicle purchases have dropped in the past 2 months. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has estimated the shutdown could slice between 1 and 2 percentage points off GDP in the fourth quarter. It projected most of the GDP drop would be recovered, but estimated that between $7 billion and $14 billion would not. The K-shaped phenomenon is also playing out among businesses. Economists said that large corporations have largely managed to withstand the impact of import duties, which have increased costs, and are investing in AI, but smaller businesses are struggling with tariffs. Profits from current production increased at a $1.66.1 billion rate last quarter, up from a $6.8 billion pace in the second quarter. Economists say Trump's policies are contributing to what they have termed an affordability crisis that is denting his approval ratings. Trump cheered the economy's strong performance last quarter, which he credited to his tariffs. Inflation, however, heated up last quarter. Households struggled with higher supermarket prices and utility bills as the rapid growth of AI and cloud computing data centers boosts electricity demand. Some consumers will see skyrocketing health insurance premiums in 2026. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index increased at a 2.8% rate after rising at a 2.1% pace in the April-June quarter. Excluding food and energy, the PCE price index advanced at a 2.9% rate following a 2.6% pace of increase in the second quarter. The U.S. Central Bank tracks the PCE price measures for its 2% inflation target. The Fed this month cut its benchmark overnight interest rate by another 25 basis points to the 3.5 to 3.75 range, but signaled borrowing costs were unlikely to fall in the near term as policymakers await clarity on the direction of the labor market and inflation. Stocks on Wall Street were trading modestly higher. The dollar fell against a basket of currencies. Shorter-dated U.S. Treasury yields rose. Business investment slowed last quarter as spending on structures such as factories contracted for the seventh consecutive quarter. That slowdown was offset by strong spending on equipment and AI-related outlays on intellectual property and equipment. Exports rebounded sharply, and imports declined for a second straight quarter, helping to narrow the trade deficit. Trade added to GDP growth for the second straight quarter. Tariffs have caused wild swings in imports, resulting in the trade deficit subtracting from and adding to GDP by margins not seen since the government started keeping records. Inventories subtracted from GDP for the second quarter in a row, while the government sector made a contribution that mostly came from defense spending. Residential spending, which includes home building and sales, remained weak. The housing market has been slammed by higher mortgage rates, which have weighed on demand, as well as rising construction costs because of duties on imported materials. Our next article is titled, Colorado Awards $52 Million for Affordable Housing Projects, dated December 17, 2025. Governor Jared Polis and state housing officials on Wednesday announced five new recipients of voter-approved Proposition 123 equity funds aimed at expanding affordable rental housing for low- and middle-income Coloradans in communities across the state. The awards, announced by Polis, the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade, and the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority, will provide investment capital for multifamily rental developments in areas including Denver, Colorado Springs, Grand Junction, Longmont, and Pueblo. "We are building more housing Coloradans can afford so you can live where you choose, close to jobs, schools, in the communities we love," Polis said in a statement. "These funds are an important step in building more homes across the state and saving Coloradans money." The Proposition 123 equity program offers below-market-rate equity investments to developers focused on building low- and middle-income rental housing. State officials said the selected projects are expected to be ready to close by March of 2026, with construction beginning soon after. Projects were chosen in part for meeting the state's strategic land use goals, including proximity to transit or job centers, water and energy efficiency, and all-electric design. "This Proposition 123 funding is supporting much-needed new housing in communities across the state, from Colorado Springs to Grand Junction," said Eve Lieberman, executive director of OEDIT. "These investments will strengthen communities and our economy. When Coloradans have access to quality housing, employers can fill jobs." Thomas Bryan, executive director and chief executive officer at CHFA, said the program provides an important financing tool for affordable housing development across Colorado. "These investments help ensure that more Coloradans have the opportunity for housing stability in communities across the state." A total of $52,141 has been preliminarily approved for the five projects, though final award amounts will be determined during underwriting. The developments are expected to serve households earning between 30% and 120% of area median income. Residents of the developments will also be eligible to benefit from the Tenant Equity Vehicle, a program launching in January 2026 that will share Proposition 123 program earnings with tenants to help build savings for down payment assistance or other needs. The equity program is funded through the Affordable Housing Financing Fund created by Proposition 123. The fund is managed by OEDIT and administered by CHFA to distribute 60% of Proposition 123 revenue for land banking, equity investments, and concessionary debt for affordable housing. With the latest awards, the state has approved about $340 million through the Affordable Housing Financing Fund. Our next article is titled, "Frisco Still Busy Despite Lack of Snow, But a Snowstorm Could Be on the Way." Dated December 25, 2025. "Most of the snow on ski slopes in the mountains this holiday season has been made by machines rather than falling from the sky, but that hasn't kept crowds away, and a storm could bring a real boost of snow soon. The good news is we have some stormy weather on the way, and that includes some snow for our northern and central mountains Friday night into Saturday night," said Denver 7 meteorologist Stacy Donaldson. "We could see potential up to a couple feet of snowfall." Denver set record highs on Christmas this year, reaching 71 degrees, and the warmer weather has led to lower snowfall totals in the mountains, too. "Definitely, we have seen a slow start here for the season, and so it's mostly man-made snow that's keeping the resorts going in the high country so far," said Donaldson. "Still, businesses in ski towns say visitors are showing up. At Bagali's restaurant in Frisco, server Jacob Strauss said tables have been busy in recent weeks, even though fewer ski runs are open. Crowd-wise, it's getting a little tight because there's not a lot of runs open," said Strauss, who snowboards in his free time. "It's not the best, but there's still snow. The ones who don't know how to ski say it's great. The ones who do obviously say it's disappointing, but for the most part, everyone's still going out there anyway. Bad snow and bad skiing is better than no skiing, said Anil Mondra, an out-of-town visitor hitting the slopes this past week. The silver lining is you're not freezing up there. For families, the holiday was about getting together more than the conditions underfoot. We're all together and we're celebrating Christmas together, said Mondra. Our next article is titled, Investigation into Cause of Netherlands Shopping Center Fire Continues. Dated December 25, 2025. The investigation into a Netherland fire that destroyed the Caribou Village Shopping Center in October continues with no official cause. The fire broke out early in the morning on October 9, and evacuations were ordered shortly afterward. The fire severely damaged about 20 businesses in the shopping center, but nobody was injured. In an update posted online earlier this month, the town of Netherland said that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives has conducted a fire investigation. While the ATF has not released an official cause as of publishing time, early statements from witnesses indicated no credible evidence that the fire had been set intentionally, the town said. The town does not control the timing or release of ATF findings, the town said. The property owner of the shopping center, Tebow Properties, has been responsible for post-fire responses. The property owner has taken steps to secure the site, including installing fencing and maintaining on-site security. These measures are intended to prevent unauthorized access, reduce safety risks to the public, and protect the site while insurance investigations, environmental assessments, and required permitting processes are completed. The town has also reported that the cleanup process has been sequential and complex. Once the state issues its approval, the town of Netherland can issue a demolition permit. Our next article is titled, Colorado Businesses Weigh In as Bill Aims to Boost U.S.-Made Park Merchandise. Dated December 21, 2025. A new bipartisan bill introduced this week would require that all products sold in national park visitor centers and gift shops be made in the United States. Under the American Products in Parks Act, introduced by Democratic U.S. Congressman Josh Gottheimer, national park retail locations would only be allowed to sell products that are fully assembled in the U.S. using only American-made ingredients or components. George Washington would want it that way, said Gottheimer. Colorado Republican Congressman Jeff Hurd is also a co-sponsor of the bill. The legislation is being proposed at a time when businesses near national parks are already struggling to find affordable American-made products for visitors. Trends at the Park, an Estes Park staple for more than a decade, is a popular stop for Rocky Mountain National Park visitors looking for something to take home as a reminder of their trip. The store prides itself on prioritizing American-made items and highlighting Estes Park vendors, but that can sometimes be a challenge. We're trying to bring more local stuff, but it's been hard to find the right products, said Rylea Brown. According to the National Park Service, more than 60% of items sold in park gift shops are partly or fully manufactured outside the United States. While the NPS has spent years encouraging the sale of American-made products, concessioners say finding domestic goods at affordable price points remains difficult. The proposed legislation is part of a broader context of recent Trump administration policy changes around national parks, including orders to remove DEI-related items from national park gift shops and visitor centers, ending free entry on MLK Day and Juneteenth, and implementing new America First entry fee policies, which will increase rates for international visitors. In response to the fee hike announcement tied to these policies, Larimer County Commissioner Jody Shattuck McNally expressed concern about the broader impacts on local businesses. I see the faces of these lodging owners and these small business folks in that valley, and I'm wondering how this will impact them and their businesses, Shattuck McNally said. Despite these concerns, the lawmakers behind the American Products in Parks Act hope their bill will bring more local revenue to the communities surrounding national parks. Gottheimer is writing a letter to the U.S. Department of Commerce and the U.S. Small Business Administration to conduct a supply chain analysis with the National Park Service to identify American-made products for sale in national parks. Brown, an Estes Park native, sees it as an opportunity for local artisans and makers. People love our national park and Estes Park posters, so maybe something local like that could be sold, Brown said. I just think that's important just because it gives back to the local community, and it's not giving all the profit elsewhere, so it stays in Colorado. The bill now awaits review by the House Natural Resources Committee. Our next article is titled, Golden Businesses Feel Impact of Power Shutoffs During Busy Holiday Weekend, dated December 19, 2025. Several small businesses in Golden on Washington Avenue say preventative power shutoffs during strong winds are cutting into what is typically their busiest shopping weekend of the year, forcing owners to get creative to stay open while bracing for lost revenue. On Friday, many storefronts along Washington Avenue were without electricity as high winds moved through the area. Some businesses relied on generators, natural light, or cash-only transactions to continue operating. Susan Lusk, owner of Red Wagon Gift Shop, said the timing could not be worse. "This is literally the busiest weekend of the year, or should be," Lusk said. Lusk said December sales helped carry her business through slower months early in the year. Without power, she has been limited to cash or Venmo payments and reduced staffing with far fewer customers than usual. "This is where we make a lot of our money," Lusk said. "That gets us through the slow months, and the fact that we're shut down for at least 2 days, and some people have shut down for 4 days now, it's tough." Lusk estimates the shop has been losing about $1,000 a day, with losses climbing into the thousands if the outage continues. Just down the street, Old Barrel Tea Company owner Heather McCallis said losing electricity during the final weekend before Christmas could mean missing out on tens of thousands of dollars in sales. "Having our busiest weekend out of commission could be $10,000 to $20,000 worth of sales, which is significant," McCallis said. McCallis said her store stayed open using limited power from a generator, but the lack of lighting and full payment systems made operations difficult. She said the priority remains paying staff, even as uncertainty looms days before Christmas. "My staff is my priority," she said. My staff will get paid. But the week of Christmas, it's difficult. At Vital Outdoors, generators allowed the business to keep some lights on and process card payments, though foot traffic was noticeably slower than normal, according to assistant manager Michaela Connell. "Usually, we definitely have a lot more people coming in," Connell said, adding the store could be down a few thousand dollars compared to a typical day this time of year. All three businesses said they understand the purpose behind the power shutoffs, which are intended to reduce wildfire risks during extreme wind conditions. Still, owners say the economic impact during peak holiday shopping is significant. "It's hard to say whether it's overkill or not," Lusk said. "You certainly don't want another Marshall fire again." Despite the challenges, business owners said they are relying on community support to help get them through the outage. "Golden is a resilient community," McCallis said. "Whether it's 10 feet of snow or wind, people are still going to come out. So it was important for us to stay open." Our next article is titled, Edgewater Becomes First Colorado City to Increase Tip Credit for Restaurant Workers, dated December 19, 2025. The Edgewater Inn has seen many changes since it opened in 1953, the latest of which being a drastic rise in operating costs for owner Naya Gingrich. "We're at this point where we've already trimmed the fat, you know. We've seen it across the board. With restaurants cutting hosts and busters, we can no longer afford," said Gingrich. It's what led the Edgewater City Council to improve an ordinance to increase the tip credit for tipped workers, while the minimum wage will go up in 2026. Tipped workers' base pay won't rise as long as tips make up the rest and they make at least the minimum wage overall. Edgewater has become the first city in Colorado to increase the tip credit for restaurant workers, a move aimed at helping struggling local businesses manage rising operating costs. The vote follows the passage of the Restaurant Relief Bill earlier this year, which gives municipalities the authority to establish different minimum wage standards for tipped versus regular employees. We're grateful that Edgewater City Council is taking the lead on this issue and supporting their local restaurant community through an increase to their tip credit, said Nick Hoover, the Director of Government Affairs for the Colorado Restaurant Association. Restaurants in Edgewater and across the state need all the help they can get right now as operating costs continue to increase and consumers continue to dine out less and less. The council's decision this week came after lengthy discussions about whether a cost of living increase was also needed. Councilmember Hannah Gay Keo supported additional measures. "I believe that this, alongside many price increases, will help at least ensure that some workers have the same spending power a year from now that they have now," she said. In the end, the ordinance passed 4-3, with council members agreeing to revisit the matter in July to determine rates for the following year. "It's important to note that this change was not made very easily. City council members spent a lot of time talking with both tipped workers and restaurant owners in Edgewater," added Edgewater City Manager Dan Maples. For now, Gingrich hopes Edgewater's decision will inspire similar action in other communities across the Front Range. Our next article is titled, "Company in Denver Hopes to Help Homebuyers Purchase Houses for as Little as $5," dated December 27, 2025. What if you could buy a house in Colorado for just $5? A new company is working to make that a reality, starting with a home in Denver. Earlier this year, Jason Graff and Sam Kogan launched their new startup, Full House Inc. The company operates a sweepstakes model in which, instead of one buyer paying the full cost of a home, the price is split among thousands of entrants, each paying a few dollars to enter. At the end of the sweepstakes period, they hope the home will be paid in full, and one lucky winner will receive it at a fraction of the cost. This fall, Graff put his own two-bedroom Denver townhome up for sale for the company's first sweepstakes. "We believe so much in the idea that we really wanted to put our money where our mouth is," Graff said. His hope for this company is to make purchasing a home more accessible, he explained. The company's launch also comes at a time when a new study from personal finance website Bankrate found that more than 75% of homes across the U.S. are unaffordable for the average household. "A lot of those like dream giveaways, those are very fancy mansions, right? And it's a marketing play for those TV reality shows. This is something different. This is truly trying to work with our community to give another option," Graff said. Since their first listing opened last month, Full House has received more than $15,000 in entries. Graff said he is hoping to list more properties soon. "I've also had real estate agents already reach out and say, 'Hey, I've got 20 homes I need to sell. Can I put my home on your platform?'" Graff said. But some realtors are cautious about a new model like this, given the many details to consider. Andrew Abrams is on the Market Trends Committee for the Denver Metro Association of Realtors, and he said he believes that sometimes selling a house the more traditional way can help sellers better plan around moving dates and other costs. "As far as my sellers go, I don't think they'd use this. I think they have their expectations for the way to sell a house. It's a little more traditional, and they would stick to that. You know, for $5, one of my buyers would say, 'Sure, I'll take a chance.' But to me, it's kind of the same thing as doing the lottery," Abrams said. As with any home purchase, Abrams explained, it comes with risks and a lot of fine print. This concludes this week's edition of Colorado Business Digest, narrated by Mike Hesser.
the Regional Transportation District is proud to introduce Tap and Ride, a new contactless fare payment system, launching Tuesday, November 25th, across all fixed route services. Tap and Ride lets you pay your fare with just a tap, using a contactless credit or debit card, or a digital wallet on your smartphone or wearable device. No more paper tickets or fare cards, just tap and go. Here are three key things to know. 1. Simple and secure. Tap and Ride is powered by JustRide EMV technology, the global standard for secure chip-enabled payments. Supported options include Visa, MasterCard, Apple Pay, Google Wallet, and Samsung Pay. 2. Fair and flexible. Your taps are tracked throughout the day and totaled into one daily fare charge. You can link your card to an account to access fare capping and discounts, or travel anonymously and check charges through your bank statement. 3. Inclusive options. RTD continues to support cash users through retail partners like CVS, Walgreens, and King Soopers, where you can add funds to your account using InComm's Vanilla Direct Pay Network. Need help? RTD staff are here to support you, especially during this transition. Call RTD Customer Care at 303-299-6000 with any questions, or visit their website at rtd-denver.com. That's 303-299-6000 or rtd-denver.com.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.